Welcome to another episode of the Untangling Web3 podcast. So we are 1 week out from the US election. And as Trump and Harris vie for the presidency, this election is being dubbed as America's crypto election because so far the crypto industry has donated over $120 million to political campaigns, nearly half of all crypto donations. So crypto has never played a more prominent role in US politics. And this election could define the trajectory of Web3, AI, decentralized tech across the board. So let's jump into it, Jack. This is going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, it's been such a strange, you know, run up to this election. I've actually not been taking as much notice of it as usual, but I have been keeping an eye on, you know, the impact of this on crypto and Web3 for obvious reasons, because, you know, Trump has had a very well-known public stance being pro-crypto for a long time. I think Kamala Harris is a little bit more cautious and regulation first, which we'll kind of get into. But yeah, there's a lot to talk about. And, you know, it's whatever happens in a week's time, it's definitely going to have a huge impact for this industry in general, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think the first thing we got to talk about is the growing influence, like, across the board. The fact that like $120 million has been donated across, like, to both parties is staggering, right? Considering like this wasn't even talked about, say, 10 years ago, and now it's accounting for a large portion. Over half of all corporate donations to campaigns are coming from crypto assets. It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's crazy. And we've seen it, you know, over the last kind of 4, 5, 6 years, maybe, we have seen a growing interest in this as a political issue, right? Because people are becoming, you know, much more in tuned with Web3 and crypto in general. People are, you know, starting to see the value proposition. I think, for better or worse, COVID kind of shone a spotlight on the fragility of lots of our infrastructure and monetary systems, and people are now, you know, caring much more about that, as well as things like free speech, which kind of goes hand in hand typically with crypto as well. So some of the kind of things that I remember happening, you know, in 2020, I think there was Andrew Yang. He's the first guy I remember being really pro crypto, and he was actually a Democrat candidate. I don't know if you remember this guy, Alex. Do you recall his? Because he was like so pro crypto, but, you know, from a, again, quite a balanced perspective, you know, we want pro crypto regulation. He obviously didn't become president at the time, but he has since like carried that on, as far as I can tell. I had a quick look before we started recording, and he has been setting up kind of lobby groups based around Web3 and crypto, trying to further this. And I think there's a lot more lobbying going on in general. And you mentioned the political donations, right? I mean, one famous donor is Sam Bankman-Fried, right? Who's currently behind bars. It was famous that in 2022, if it was the midterms, right, when he donated around 100 million just himself, and he donated it to both parties, like he was splitting it across both to try and influence. Basically, he was trying to, you know, be a bit of a kingmaker, or so long as he, you know, make sure he backs one of the whoever ends up winning, being in power, that he could help shape these regulations. So yeah, there's been a lot of change over the past few years, and now it's properly a ballot box issue, really.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, I guess. Like, we see this like happen a lot of the time, where you'll see these big donors donate to both sides. It's kind of like they're in. If one of them gets elected, then they think they then have a reason to have the conversations and to be, you know, part of the decision making process. Like you say, the kingmakers. I think that America, well, this is kind of obvious, is at the center of this, and is in a unique position in so many ways for so many reasons. One is, like, you know, the idea of freedom. I remember someone describing this when Trump started to adopt Bitcoin. It's like freedom money or something like that. So that's like one of the big tenets, and why America's kind of quite, I guess, in their ideology, quite well placed for the Bitcoin dilemma and the conversation around Bitcoin. The other one is it's an absolute innovation hub, absolute technology hub, Silicon Valley, Texas, all these things. And, you know, a lot of people saying crypto is the next big innovation spot. So who's going to be the primary player in that? Is it going to be America? Are they going to continue the 21st century tech dominance by also pushing heavily into, you know, Bitcoin and crypto generally, and Web3 space at large? That's the other thing. And then the final thing is that, you know, the US dollar is kind of, it underpins so much of the global the monetary system, right? And it's been in recent times maybe more weaponized. We've seen how it's been used to hold people accountable, kind of used to punish, say, countries that are deemed non-desirable by America. And we're seeing more and more people trying to, or more and more foreign states try to move away from the gold standards as a means for, you know, exchange. And one thing that I saw very recently was at this BRICS summit with Russia and Iran and all these countries, was that they actually tried to move, they wanted to really push the idea of potentially using Bitcoin as a settlement standard instead of the, you know, the US dollar, which is kind of mind-blowing, probably part of the reason why, you know, Bitcoin is booming right now. But America's in this tough position where they have the dominance of the US dollar. Will that also exist in 30 years time? And if, say, you know, the new dominant standard becomes something like Bitcoin, do they want to get involved in that nice and early now where they still have a bit of a head start, or trust that the dollar will just, you know, continue to dominate? I think that's why they're in this really unique position.
Yeah. And obviously lots of the crypto space has historically been American, right? Some of the biggest startups, some of the biggest public companies now, you look at people like Coinbase, have been US-based companies and US-based startups. So they have fostered so much of the innovation that's brought the industry forward. And, you know, for better or worse, they underpin lots of the stable coins and things, you know, Tether, USDC. These are all dollar-denominated stable coins, typically. And that's the most popular one. You have, you know, US issuers for lots of these as well. So the US dollar is pretty intrinsically linked to what's going on in crypto. And yeah, the whole BRICS thing is interesting because for a long time, I feel like politicians maybe were thinking, well, we don't want to engage with crypto very much. We don't want to see Bitcoin as, we see Bitcoin as something that could, you know, eat our lunch, right? It could be something that threatens us. And now other countries are starting to say, well, we want to de-dollarize anyway, as you said. So maybe crypto could be almost a backdoor to help push back against that. So yeah, it's a lot of change in the perspective on that. And obviously, when it comes to regulation, that's also been a hot topic, right? Despite all those companies being US-based, so many people we've spoken to in the last year have always cited, you know, well, the regulatory landscape in America, although stuff is happening so slowly, and the hostility towards lots of companies or people engaging with crypto has meant they just don't want to start, you know, new operations there, right? Lots of the companies now being formed in Dubai, Singapore, elsewhere in the world. So yeah, this is feels like a bit of a crux point for America to, if they do want to become a proper crypto or Bitcoin hub for the world, this is a big moment for them.
Yeah. And we're going to talk, you know, we're going to try and stay somewhat neutral on this between the two candidates. And we'll go into each of their policies and what it might mean purely from like the Web3 crypto perspective. But one of the most interesting things, well, it's quite exciting, I say exciting, quite scary as well in a lot of ways, how tight the race is. And if you look at like most polls, like it's very tight. So who knows which way it's going to go and what that might mean in 2 weeks' time. But one of the things that's not so tight is the Polymarket activity, which is kind of like a link between betting and crypto. For Polymarket, those people that don't know, it's like a decentralized crypto betting platform that's based on Polygon, obviously. And they've seen 1.7 billion wagered on the election outcome, which is like obviously one of the most wagered events in history. And on that, Trump is well ahead. And it's kind of hard to know if that is wishful thinking. He's on like 55% chance, according to the money on Polymarket. But like I say, very difficult to know whether that's just wishful thinking from the crypto natives of the world who think that a Trump election is very good for Bitcoin and regulation and lower taxes and all this kind of stuff. But that's a big difference.
Yeah, and it's interesting that Polymarket has kind of become so popular in the last year, just in the run-up to the election. Maybe that's partly why they did it, because this is a great free marketing for them. And it's an interesting idea, this whole kind of decentralized prediction markets. But yeah, you'd imagine that, you know, as we'll get into, Trump being rather more pro-crypto than Harris is going to definitely bias and skew those results towards him. You know, the people likely to be engaging in Polymarket probably more pro-crypto already, so they might align more with the views of the more pro-crypto candidate. But just before we kind of get into their specific policies as well, we've seen a few other things in the last couple of years, like what's been happening in Miami. State government in Miami has really been pushing for them to be the crypto hub within America. So, you know, that's the interesting thing about America as well, is how decentralized it is, right? You have the federal system, but also you have this state level autonomy. So you've got, you know, Ron DeSantis, Republican governor of Miami, He's got a very interesting set of stances as well. Like he's started looking at legislation to prohibit, you know, central bank digital currencies. So he's very against that side of things. But he's also, you know, generally just been trying to make Miami the crypto capital. You also have the mayor, I think, Francis Suarez, who has been, you know, doing like he's been playing the social media game a lot, but he's been, you know, very famous for, you know, starting to take payments in Bitcoin. There's now a Miami coin as well. I haven't looked too much into that one. I heard it's like just part of this general, you know, trend there. But they've attracted a lot of business. I know a lot of companies who are thinking of America have chosen Miami rather than, you know, a New York or a San Francisco because they're so welcoming of it. So yeah, that's just one other thing I wanted to highlight before we get into the specifics of Trump v. Harris as well.
Yeah, it's important. Like so much of this stuff comes down to tax. And it's kind of like whichever candidate says they're going to have lower tax enforcement on, you know, capital gains and crypto and all this kind of stuff, that tends to be where the money goes. But yeah, let's get into it then. Let's go into the specific stances. I think most people now know that Donald Trump has come out as very pro-Bitcoin. It seems like maybe 4 or 5 months ago that he started to jump on this Bitcoin hype. And as soon as he announced that he was pro-Bitcoin, went to, the Bitcoin conference. Where was that again? Was that in Miami?
I think it might have been. There's definitely one now annually in Miami, so it could well have been that one, yeah.
Yeah, he went to Bitcoin 24 and gave a talk there, which is kind of unprecedented. And everyone said, you know, Harris had the opportunity, but she couldn't make it for whatever reason. So that they took that as a strong indicator that of the two candidates at that time, Trump was far more in the pro-Bitcoin camp. And I think that was one of the first times he started to call it freedom money, you know, all this kind of concept. Mm-hmm. And the inpouring of donations in Bitcoin because of that was like absolutely crazy, kind of staggering in the few days after. So yeah, he kind of set the initial standard. And it seems like Harris, in a way, has been trying to catch up since then.
Yeah, and if you look back historically at Trump's statements, I'm pretty sure at one point a few years ago, he was saying, oh, you know, I don't really get Bitcoin, doesn't seem like a good idea to me. And then he has actually pivoted on that pretty hard in recent years. Now, obviously, he has this much more pro-Bitcoin specifically and also crypto more generally stance. I mean, I don't know if you've also followed his recent Trump coin launch. Have you seen this in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, we had Sandy Carter on the show who was talking. She tried to not get into the realm of politics, but she said she bought some of these like Trump cards and like made an absolute killing on them.
Well, this is the thing. So that he's actually, you're right, he's been involved in quite a few different projects, like those Trump NFT things, I think they were. But now, literally a couple of weeks ago, I think it was launched, you have this World Liberty Financial coin, which has been kind of endorsed by Trump. And I saw some great coverage of this because he's not, you know, he's not the CEO and founder of this company or anything, but he's basically endorsed it as, you know, there are lots of cryptos out there associated with Trump, and the meme coins don't even get us started on how many meme coins have gone political. But yeah, this new coin has come out. It's not doing very well, the World Liberty Financial coin. I'm pretty sure it's like they issued something like 20 billion tokens and they haven't sold more than about 5% of them so far. So it's not gone that well for the officially endorsed one. But yeah, it's very clear now to everyone who's watching that, you know, Trump is at least the more pro-crypto candidate that's coming into this election.
Yeah, and I think that also aligns with like his vice presidential nominee as well, which is JD Vance. Like he actually seems to be someone that really understands, you know, crypto down to like the technical level as well. I've seen a few talks of him actually talking about the fundamentals of blockchain technology, how it adds transparency, you know, disintermediation, all this kind of stuff, removing points of centralization from a technical standpoint, not just from like a speculative standpoint. And I remember one of the things that I found really interesting was that when he was talking about crypto, he was like, oh, actually, you know, all cryptos aren't necessarily the same and some have much more utility than others. And that should be one of the metrics for which we assess security versus commodities. Do these tokens have real utility or are they just a means for speculation? And when I saw that, I was like, oh, wow, this guy actually really understands this and hasn't just read like a one liner. So I think that's another, you know, positive step for, you know, Trump in terms of like crypto understanding and crypto adoption as well as JD Vance.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's very much a pro-crypto ticket overall. That's a good point to make, right? And I think to not make a generalization, but from what I've seen, you do. I would say the Republican party in general and people who support it would tend to be more crypto-leaning in general anyway. You know, there's probably a million reasons why, and I don't want to get into the deep philosophical politics of all that stuff, but that's just kind of an observation I've made. And then, yeah, as you said, also, obviously, Trump has a pretty anti-CBDC stance now. He kind of says that's a little bit too much government overreach. And on a similar, in a similar vein, the regulatory aspects of this election are really important, right? Because he, I think he's a little bit more laissez-faire with the regulation, to put it mildly. So he's pretty much made it a campaign pledge to get rid of Gary Gensler as the SEC chair, who, you know, we've spoken about a lot, and there's a lot of joking about, but it's a serious point that a lot of those companies you mentioned, like the Coinbases, have been in a kind of cat and mouse back and forth battle with the SEC and also the CFTC, of course, as well, in the classification of tokens and things. So the noises he's making, Trump now is making, around replacing that, kind of signals that he is looking to get at least more clarity than what we have from the current regime. I actually don't know. I don't exactly know what will be replacing it and what would be the end result of that. But we know that will potentially be changed, or most likely be changed to that regime if Trump does get in, I think.
Yeah, I think one thing that's kind of clear about Trump is he knows how to play politics, right? And he knew that one-liner about Gary Gensler, for whatever reason, really touched a crypto nerve. And like, people were hated him, whether he saw the memes online or whatever it was. And when he made that statement, "I'm going to get rid of Gary Gensler," even if people didn't believe that he was like into the crypto and fully backing it, that got a lot of positive attention from the whole space. So it was a very smart move just to say that, even though Gary Gensler is meant to be a non-political, neutral kind of person in between, like a civil servant style character. But on the like Republican Democrat ideologies, I think it's fair to say that, like, traditionally what you'd say from a Republican and is small government, more light touch, lower regulation, lower taxes. And I think that, if, again, not talking about the practical application, if that's actually how it works, but just from the ideology, that tends to fit well with crypto, which is kind of like, let people do what they want to do, let private companies do things, don't be too regulatory heavy, and also, you know, really bring down the tax if you can. So that feeds very nicely into what, you know, Bitcoin is trying to be a proponent of.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's, it is probably worth, you know, working out where that alignment is between what you might call the crypto ethos or the traditional crypto ethos. It's very libertarian, right? We don't use that word all the time anymore, because I think the Web3 space has broadened out a lot. But a lot of the ideas in the early kind of circles of Bitcoin were libertarian, and kind of individuals having freedom and control over what they're doing. And that obviously filters into things like tax policy. And especially, you know, if they end up just wanting to treat crypto like any other asset class, then the implication of the capital gains tax and things like that will be one of the big things that people are thinking about. So yeah, that's the kind of, I think, you know, that's a lot of the main issues. He's also talked a little bit about mining and production, right, of Bitcoin, because that's been an interesting geopolitical point in the past, hasn't it? Because, you know, in China there was the ban on Bitcoin mining, and we don't have a ban on Bitcoin mining in America. I'm pretty sure some of the biggest pools the biggest mining operations are actually based there already. And I know Texas is one of those, again, similar to Miami, but more as an industrial hub for mining. That's really taken off in the last few years. So I think he's got a slightly different stance on that too.
And I think that kind of feeds into like the profit and economy versus like sustainability. Like, Democrats traditionally, I'd say, were a bit more regulatory heavy, more sustainability, environmentally conscious, whereas like Republicans push more into, you know, again, light touch. It's all about economy and giving people, letting people do what they want to do. So I think that's probably one of the reasons why people see him as being more mining friendly. I think when what was one of the statements he made, it was something to the sound of "make Bitcoin mining American" or something like this, the one-liners that a guy comes up with. And then the other thing is, like, obviously the endorsement of key figures like Elon Musk. Like, Elon Musk's now Trump's biggest backer, and he's obviously, everyone knows him as being very crypto friendly, like one of the first places, Tesla was one of the first places to enable Bitcoin. Obviously had a massive holding of Bitcoin early on. Don't even get me started on the Dogecoin debacle. But then there was early talk, and Trump has also said that he's going to try and bring Elon Musk in as like head of efficiency or something like that for the government to make loads of cuts like he did at Twitter. But there was also discussions maybe of trying to get Jamie Dimon on as like in the Trump administration as well, who's been notoriously quite anti-crypto. So it's really hard to know exactly, you know, who he's going to get in his administration, where they're going to stand on the pro versus, you know, anti.
Yeah, you're right. The Musk factor is Musk pretty factor. Significant here, because they're the two figures that have probably had the largest direct impact on the Bitcoin price and also the Doge price, as you mentioned, based purely on their tweets, right, about it. In the past, we've seen big price swings based on what they're saying about it. Musk has always been intimating that Doge could be, he says the funniest outcome is the most likely outcome, right? He's kind of hinting that maybe Doge will be the dominant crypto one day. And he's always been hinting at using crypto for payments directly in Twitter and monetization, things like that. So whether or not, Bitcoin and Doge get used directly is one of those things on his agenda. So yeah, to have his backing has brought over a huge number of other people, because I would say Musk is more or less a lodestone for crypto people in general, right? Most people who like crypto are also supporters of Musk, and that's a whole other territory to wade into. But yeah, it's worth bringing up. And then on the other side of the coin, right? So that covers more or less Trump's stance on crypto, I think, and what he's coming into the election with. So what about Kamala Harris then? From what I've seen, I don't know too much of the details, actually. I haven't seen her make too many big public statements about it, but I would guess she has a kind of general balanced approach to these kind of things, right? So pro-regulation, but maybe heavier regulation than Trump is, but maybe not as vocally supportive of what crypto is all about, I'm guessing. Is that what she's saying?
Yeah, I think like if we're using Trump as like a baseline, then every statement is weak, right? Because he just makes the strongest statements, and yeah, they change every week, but you kind of know what he's thinking at the time, right? There's no filter there. But yeah, it's not fair to say that, the Republican Party and Trump are completely pro crypto and the Democrats are not pro crypto and Harris is not pro crypto, because I think she will be pro crypto in a way, just to a lesser extent than Trump is. Like, she's got prominent figures like Mark Cuban, Anthony Scaramucci, are very pro Bitcoin. They've done a lot of talks at these big Bitcoin conferences. So they have a whole pack called Crypto for Harris, who are kind of backing her and supporting her. But their approach is slightly different. Rather than no regulation, lower capital gains tax, all this kind of stuff, it's a bit more, I guess, let's say mature, maybe, in a way, to say, we want some consumer protections, we want some regulation, but it's a bit more heavy touch than the Republican stance. I think a big thing that has turned a lot of people off, purely from the crypto perspective on Harris, is this increase in capital gains tax that she seems to be proposing. I think she wants to increase capital gains to like 25% or 28% or something like this. And again, I don't know how much of this has actually been consolidated, but there was talk at some point of having this unrealized gains tax for ultra high net worth individuals. So obviously a lot of the big Bitcoin whales are looking at that and like, no way, don't let that come in and touch me.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much bang on what I'm anticipating with, the potential of a Harris presidency would be a watered down or a less extreme version of those two poles that you see with Trump. So I think I from what I can tell, her stances, as you said, would be slightly heavier touch regulation and slightly less enthusiasm for the space in general. But I think they're both pointing in roughly the same direction, from what I can tell, even if, Trump is doing it in a much more bombastic way. They're both just going with the change in public mood we've seen towards crypto over the last couple of years. If you'd had this election 2-3 years ago, I think maybe we would be saying that the Democrat Party would be not as interested in this as a political issue, because it was less of a political issue. People weren't thinking about it as much. But now they're kind of both, I think both parties are just simply recognizing that enough people care about this now, and it's impacting them enough, and there's widespread enough ownership of these kind of assets that they have to A, have policies on them, B, be more or less pro this industry and assets, and C, also have to start doing something about the regulatory side, right? Because it's just been too stagnant. So yeah, in my opinion, they're magnetized in the same direction, but
yeah
to lesser and different degrees.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, 20% of voting age Americans own some form of crypto, right? Mm. So it's like, purely from like the political perspective, they have to have something that kind of pushes or kind of pulls, sorry, more that base towards them. And if Trump has kind of anchored himself to be like, I am the absolute extreme, I am so pro Bitcoin, and whether it's just a political stunt or he just fundamentally believe in the tenets of Bitcoin, who knows? But Harris has kind of had to gravitate in that direction just so he can't say, you know, she's anti-money, anti-crypto, anti all that stuff, and you lose 20% of the base.
Yeah, that's a really good point that you mentioned about the young vote, I think, that I actually hadn't thought about before, because crypto is such an easy way, I think, to capture young votes, right? And this is, you know, if the America is anything like the UK, then people who are younger tend to be more left, and over their course of their lifetime will go towards the right. So this actually, you know, maybe a lot of this could be about just capturing the young vote. And I think that's, yeah, that's something I hadn't thought about before. Maybe it could be the thing that swings the election, if that's what, if enough young people vote for it, right?
Well, maybe, yeah. It's one of like the big motivators. Like, it's, you know, everyone's saying it's like harder to be a young person in this day and age, like the Western world, and it's getting, you know, our parents had it easier and all this kind of stuff. And that those kind of problems are very tricky to solve. But like a simple one-liner, like, I'm going to make it easier to own crypto and decrease the capital gains tax on it, it's like, oh, wow, that helps me as a young person who understands technology, who's, you know, disadvantaged because of all this stuff that's, you know, my parents had that I don't have. And I guess like the other point is there's all the internal stuff that it's, you know, we want to build it in America. We want to support, you know, investment, you'd be light touch, have Bitcoin built in America, all this kind of stuff. But the other angle is, like we said, the foreign policy stuff. If this is going to be like the global reserve in, say, 50 years time, now is the time to get involved. Now is the time to be building. And if, you know, America does want to say, use it to put pressure on other nations or ensure that people can't put pressure on them, like, they need to start thinking, you know, 20 years ahead. So they really do need to get into this space as soon as possible.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think, that's a very nice way of putting it. When you're also thinking about, you know, maybe we should broaden this discussion out into, you know, we've talked about crypto a lot, right? And I think so far, at least I've definitely been thinking about the two candidates as Bitcoin and crypto and their stance on that. But then if you also broaden it out to, you know, our definition of Web3 and the broader privacy preserving technology aspects, the AI, the aspects that we've been talking about a lot, I think there's also things to consider there now, right? Because on the one hand, you know, Trump is, again, extreme into the free speech element, which I think, again, resonates with a lot of people in crypto as well, because they're using an alternative asset class that's, you know, easy to track, but easy to remain private and virtually anonymous in some cases as well. So that's another area I think we should consider, right? And is there a difference between them in your view?
Yeah, I think like when we're talking about Web3, the idea of privacy preservation, you know, AI misinformation, like AI and misinformation are going to have such a huge impact on, you know, this election. We're already seeing they've had such a huge impact on this election so far. And I think it all does come under the umbrella of, you know, light touch or regulation. Like, do we protect consumers or believe in absolute freedom? And it kind of, well, you know, the Americans will go back to the Constitution and say, you know, I have a right to say these things. And, you know, my personal stance on this, I think, is everyone has a right to speak. And that's not the problem that we have with like Twitter and social media. Like, everyone should have a right to speak, and we shouldn't censor people. The problem with social media, in my mind, is that the things that the algorithm, like what it prioritizes, is fundamentally, you know, kind of scary things, right? It touches on fear, hate, misinformation sometimes. I think that's the problem, is that we have freedom of speech, that's fine, but we don't have complete fairness in what is prioritized. And I think the problem right now is we're getting a lot of priority in feeds that are just showing hate and misinformation because it's the clickbait of the world, right? And I think that's one of the problems. But when Harris says, if she does say, we need to like protect from harmful content online, you know, maybe I do agree there should be some more protection, because right now it's a bit of a free-for-all on Twitter. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think, again, I don't know much about the specifics of what Harris thinks about free speech, but we're talking about America, right? So free speech is a huge part of, you know, their constitutional rights and things they value in society. So I think she will similarly have a very pro free speech stance, but probably with more kind of guardrails than Trump administration would have. But again, an interesting thing here is, who's controlling one of those big algorithms? Well, it's Elon Musk again, right? Yeah. And the acquisition of Twitter by Musk in the last, yeah, it's in the last presidential cycle, right? It was 2 years ago or something like that.
Yeah.
So that's actually probably more an aspect of not how this election will impact crypto, but how crypto or crypto people have potentially influenced this election, right? Because the way that the platform has changed, you know, Trump being able to get back on Twitter, for example, and the changes to the algorithm and the kind of content you're seeing now on Twitter, and, you know, the potential for higher misinformation in some cases, but also you have things like community note features now. So maybe there's a balancing effect there. But yeah, it's just worth noting that this is the first election in which someone who controls one of these big social media algorithms has been very, very firmly behind one of the candidates, right? We saw Elon Musk giving a speech, you know, in favor of Trump very recently. So yeah, that's a whole, these three characters are kind of all in the story now, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, he must be the biggest asset that Donald Trump has right now. Like, if I'm, say, looking at articles and anything off social media in the real world, then it seems to be very balanced, maybe somewhat pro-Harris in terms of the amount of content. As soon as I go on Twitter, like, it is all Trump absolutely everywhere. Harder to know whether it's because his fan base are more on Twitter, or if, like, the algorithm itself kind of focuses and prioritizes on whatever kind of content, you know, Donald Trump is putting there. Because he, to be fair, on the one hand, you could take the tinfoil hat stuff, you know, Elon Musk is pushing it, which I don't really buy into. But also, Donald Trump is very good at clickbait. Like, he's very good at the one-liners, whether you love it or absolutely hate it. Like, it does get your eyeballs at the end of the day. So I'm not surprised that he's dominant on Twitter, because, you know, he's kind of unfiltered and quite raw. And that's what a lot of his fan base like about him. But yeah, it will be really interesting to see. I think that under Trump, social media will have kind of a much more open playing field and will be able to do whatever they want, because, you know, Donald Trump is, he's been filtered before. So he's kind of ensured that he can't be filtered again, I imagine. Whereas Harris has obviously seen, say, a lot of the negatives of all the misinformation and having the Donald Trumps of the world on Twitter. So maybe she'll be much more kind of pushing on the KYC, AML, you know, reducing misinformation. And also, like, we need to get into this. Like, there's been a lot of, say, foreign actors that have been acting on Twitter, be it for Trump or for Harris, and they've been part of the Misinformation Act. And at the end of the day, from like a security kind of from a security perspective, you need to look into that and be like, okay, we've kind of got these tools that we aren't regulating and filtering right now, and we have foreign agents that are influencing politics. Like, do we need to look at that from a security perspective or not? But yeah, it's really convoluted, and I think a very complex issue. I have no idea where I stand on it, to be honest.
No, I think, and it's healthy sometimes to not have a strong opinion on some of these things, right? You know, when everyone's forced to, you know, feel like you have to shout an opinion. I think, just to follow what you said, I think we could certainly see, and again, more likely under a, well, actually, I think we could potentially see either social media reform or exploring new models of social media under either of these two candidates. I'd say under Trump, it'd be more likely to look at new models of social media and new platforms, and Harris is probably more likely, in my opinion, to look at, you know, reform. But either way, that's a change. And the reason I say on Trump's side is that he, as you said, he's already had to be moved from his primary platform and explore other options. And a big part of, you know, what we're seeing in Web3 is alternative social media springing up with different incentive models, different content advertising model and things. So I think that is kind of second order effect of the election that maybe we could see in a few years down the line if Trump gets in. And with Harris, I think it's probably more likely to just be, well, looking at, as you say, these election interference potential issues, security, privacy issues that we have. But yeah, they're all, for me, they're a bit longer term. So what do you think? Let's say next week, you know, not what's going to happen in the election, but what's going to happen immediately after. Like, what do you think are the big potential direct impacts of either candidate getting in?
Well, I mean, not financial advice, but a lot of I think it's kind of obvious that if Trump gets in, there will be a spike in crypto generally, right? I've seen some people putting it as high as 20% basically within 24 hours, because he's already talked about, you know, putting some of, you know, the US Federal Reserve from gold to Bitcoin. We haven't even talked about Robert Kennedy Jr., right? Like, he's now part of supporting Trump, and he's an absolute proponent of Bitcoin. I remember him saying at one of the conferences that he's put all his savings into Bitcoin. So it is obvious that Trump is much more pro-Bitcoin light regulation. And if he even starts to consider putting some of the US Federal Reserve's assets into Bitcoin, that's going to have an absolute incredible impact on the state of Bitcoin, right? So we're going to see a massive spike. That's obvious. Harris, I imagine less so. I think there will be a spike because, you know, across the board, I think people see her as a bit more stable generally. I think that's fair to say. And stability is good for investment no matter where you are. So I think both will lead to some kind of increase in price. God, I feel like you're giving financial advice now. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not going to say an increase. I think my prediction is that, you know, in the immediate aftermath, there will be a move. A significant move, right?
That's the most boring gray thing anyone could say. Something's going to happen, I promise.
Because there are just so many ways you can cut this, right? I mean, I think you could see a move upwards based on either candidate. You know, maybe for Trump, it's, oh, well, very pro Bitcoin guy's in, Bitcoin's going to go to the moon. That's the kind of thinking. Or maybe if Harris gets in, it's a pro stability move and the US dollar goes up and drags things up with it, like crypto potentially. That could be a reason. It could also be a buy the rumor, sell the news type, right? So in either of those cases, people could be selling assets. The increase in price could have already been priced in to the asset, and then people are trying to profit off that in the immediate aftermath. So, you know, even if we do see a rise up, maybe it'll sneak back down. But yeah, I think something will happen. Okay, I know it's not a great prediction.
That's so boring. I am going to put my neck out there and say if Trump gets in, there will be a big spike, 10% maybe, something like that. If Harris gets in, there'll be a little increase. The only thing that I think will lead to a decrease is if there isn't a peaceful transition of power, which hopefully seems unlikely. I think that's the only thing, is people like stability and they think stability with Trump is they know what he's going to do with Bitcoin. With Harris, they think, you know, she's not going to push the agenda too much. She's going to just kind of go with the previous administration regulations slowly, slowly. That's stability. The only thing that's bad is definitely instability. And if there isn't a peaceful transition of power, that's the only thing I think will lead to a decrease. But let's see.
Yeah, that's a scary proposition now, right? After what we saw last time, if there isn't a peaceful transition of power, I think in that case, all the poly market bets are off, right? Who knows what we're going to see in that case. So yeah, not one that I want to think about personally, but yeah, maybe a slightly dour note to end on. But I think...
Well, how about the AI and regulation standpoint, social media? I think that's an interesting one. What do you think in each administration is going to happen over the course of 4 years with social media, AI, online content?
Yeah, I mean... My guess would be that if it's a Harris administration, there will be pretty strong moves to regulate AI heavily, to start, you know, Apple have just announced a kind of new Apple intelligence model for doing things where that they're already bringing into products, right? The new iMacs, these privacy protections for the data sets you're using. And I think that's probably a very, very good thing. And I think that is the kind of trend that a democratic leadership would probably try and hammer home a little bit further with regulation. With Trump, I don't necessarily know which way it would go, because I do think that would be a popular move because it's a pro-privacy thing. And I think that also is, you know, kind of goes hand in hand with free speech. The problem Trump would have is that it's pro-privacy, but it's also pro-regulation. It's heavy touch, right? So maybe, you know, there's something he loses there that Harris doesn't. So I do think either way, the regulation is coming for AI, and it should do. But I actually think it would get there faster with Harris if she gets in.
Yeah, same. I think the difference in approaches is the size of government. And I think Trump would let private sectors slowly work it out. And I think the private sectors would eventually work it out because there'd be push from consumers. Whereas I think with Harris, it would come from government and the regulation would come in that would enforce private sector to start to combat misinformation, AI spam, all this kind of stuff online. And, you know, in both ways, it's quite selfish because they want to back, you know, their base. But yeah, it's quite an exciting one. I think regulation is coming. It really has to. And hopefully, I think we said a year ago when we were doing predictions, hopefully by the next election cycle, there'll be tools to actually combat all the misinformation, absolute, you know, garbage content on social media right now.
Yeah, exactly. It's super interesting. I think this is the watershed election for crypto. I think from this point onwards, it will be a firm kind of stalwart of the electoral mindset, and you know, every single day the demographic is shifting towards people who are going to be more likely to be pro crypto in general because of, you know, growing up in the age where it's abundant and there is opportunity there for people. So yeah, this feels like a watershed. It's very interesting. I'm really excited to see it. And as we've said, just to kind of summarize and wrap up, So we've got two very different candidates, it's fair to say. But, you know, in my opinion, both kind of relatively pro crypto and hopefully move the industry forward, but with slightly different approaches to do it. Obviously, Trump being a little bit more hardline, a little bit more extreme in the approach potentially. But I do think either way, both candidates are going to have to succumb to the prevailing view that, you know, crypto is here to stay now. And yeah, we'll see what happens with the free speech and AI aspects. I think that's a super interesting one that will be a bit of a slow burn, but yeah, one to keep an eye on. So let's see. 1 week out, Alec. I won't ask you who you think is going to win, but it's going to be fun to watch. And so that all I'm going to say is thank you for listening, wherever you may be, and join us next time to untangle a little more Web3.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Untangling Web3.
Don't forget to send us your thoughts, questions, and comments on social media. And be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast provider to catch the next episode. See you next time to untangle a little bit more of Web3.
The views we express here are our own and do not reflect the views of our employers.